Welcome to Listen 2. This is Ted. The news was published on Tuesday, October 15th. Today we're joined by Eric and Kate to discuss a fascinating topic. Let's dive right in. Today we're discussing the fascinating topic of longevity and the habits that can help us live to 100. Let's dive into the key details from recent research. Eric, what's your take on the most important factor for longevity?
Well, Ted, it's clear that diet is the cornerstone of a long life. Research shows that a mostly plant-based diet, similar to the Mediterranean style, is crucial. We're talking legumes, nuts, whole grains, and plenty of leafy greens. Interestingly, red meat is off the menu for centenarians. And get this, time-restricted eating or fasting for 12 hours daily has shown some pretty remarkable benefits. It's not just about what we put in our mouths, but when we do it too.
Hold on, Eric. While diet is important, it's not the be-all and end-all. We can't ignore the role of physical activity. Daily movement, even low-intensity
I don't disagree about movement,
like...
Kate, but let's not underestimate the power of what we put in our bodies. The research is clear that diet
Sure, but that's not feasible for everyone. What about shift workers or people with irregular schedules? We need to focus
Interesting
on
point.
More accessible.
Let's move on to another aspect. Kate, what's your view on the role of social connections in longevity?
Social connections are absolutely crucial, Ted. The Harvard study that's been going on for 86 years shows it's the number one factor for a longer, happier life. It's all about nurturing relationships and investing in them. Think about it. Having a strong support network, people to laugh with, cry with, and share experiences with, that's what keeps us going, you know? It's not rocket science, it's human nature.
I'd argue that's an oversimplification, Kate. While relationships are important, the study also emphasizes the need for a sense of purpose.
That's a bit elitist, don't you think? Not everyone has the luxury of pursuing lifelong learning. Strong social connections.
It's not elitist to encourage personal growth. In fact, the concept of ikigai in Okinawa, Japan, finding your purpose.
But that's just one culture. We can't apply that universally. We need to focus on strategies that work for everyone, regardless
Both of you raise interesting points. Eric, what's your thought on the role of faith or spirituality in longevity?
Well, Ted, it's fascinating to see how spirituality plays into this. Research shows that people who have some form of faith or life philosophy tend to live longer. It's not about any specific religion, but rather having a sense of meaning and purpose beyond ourselves. This ties back to what I was saying about Ikigai. It's about having something to wake up for every day, something that gives your life direction and meaning.
But we can't ignore that not everyone is religious or spiritual. We need to focus on practical, tangible habits that everyone can adopt, regardless of their beliefs. Things like eating
I'm not saying everyone staying. Needs to be religious, Kate. It's about finding meaning in life, which can come from various sources. The key is having a sense of purpose.
Now let's look at a historical perspective. Can either of you draw parallels between these longevity habits and practices from the past?
Absolutely, Ted. This reminds me of the ancient Greek concept of eudaimonia, which dates back to Aristotle in the 4th century BC. It's about living in accordance with one's true self and virtues, very similar to the modern idea of finding purpose or ikigai. The Greeks were onto something big here. They emphasized moderation in diet, regular exercise, and cultivation of the mind, all habits we're discussing today. It's like they had a crystal ball or something.
That's a bit of a stretch, Eric. We're talking about concrete habits here, not philosophical concepts. A better historical parallel would be the traditional lifestyle.
I disagree, Kate. The Greek philosophy directly influenced lifestyle choices. They weren't just sitting around philosophizing. They were living these principles.
But those were elite practices, not accessible to the average person. The Blue Zone communities show us real-world, practical examples.
Interesting perspectives. Kate, can you elaborate on these Blue Zone communities and their historical significance?
Gladly, Ted. Blue zones, identified by Dan Buettner, are regions where people live significantly longer than average. Places like Okinawa in Japan, Sardinia in Italy, and Nicoya in Costa Rica. These communities have maintained traditional lifestyles for centuries, emphasizing plant-based diets, natural movement, and strong social bonds. It's not some highfalutin philosophy. It's real people living real lives and living them long and well. That's the kind of practical example we should be looking at.
While that's true, Kate, you're overlooking the role of purpose and spirituality in these communities. It's not just about diet and exercise. Many of these
regions have strong... That's a simplification, Eric. The key is their lifestyle as a whole, not just cherry-picked aspects. We need to look at the full picture. You can't just focus
on one. I'm not cherry-picking, Kate. I'm pointing out that these historical examples align with the multifaceted approach to longevity we're discussing today. It's not just
about physical health, but focusing too much on the spiritual aspect might alienate people who don't share those beliefs. We need to emphasize the practical, actionable habits.
Both of you make compelling arguments. Eric, how do you think these historical practices have evolved to fit our modern world?
Well, Ted, I think we've seen a fascinating evolution. While the core principles remain the same, eat well, move often, find purpose, we've adapted them to our modern lifestyles. Take diet, for instance. We now have access to a global array of foods that can support a plant-based diet. And with technology, we can track our eating patterns and optimize our fasting windows. It's like we've taken these age-old wisdoms and supercharged them with modern science and tech.
Looking to the future, how do you think these longevity habits will evolve? Eric, what's your prediction?
I believe we'll see a rise in personalized longevity strategies, Ted. With advancements in genetic testing and AI, we'll be able to tailor diets, exercise routines, and even fasting schedules to individual needs. It's not one size fits all anymore. Imagine having a health plan as unique as your fingerprint. We're talking about AI analyzing your genetic predispositions, your gut microbiome, even your sleep patterns to create a longevity strategy that's perfect for you and you alone.
That's a very tech-centric view, Eric. Not everyone has access to genetic testing or AI. I think we'll see a return to community-based health initiatives.
But Kate, technology is becoming more accessible every day. Personalized health strategies could become as common as smartphones. It's about empowering individuals.
That's an overly optimistic view. We need to address systemic issues that prevent people from adopting healthy habits. Community gardens, walkable cities, social programs.
Both scenarios seem plausible. Kate, how do you see the role of government and policy in shaping future longevity trends?
Government intervention is crucial, Ted. We need policies that promote healthy food options, create green spaces, and ensure work-life balance. Japan's Metabo Law to reduce obesity is a great example of how policy can impact public health. It's not about controlling people's lives, it's about creating an environment where the healthy choice is the easy choice. Imagine if every neighborhood had a community garden. Or if workplaces were required to provide standing desks and fitness breaks. That's the kind of change we need.
I disagree, Kate. Too much government intervention can backfire. Look at the failure of soda taxes or overly restrictive dietary guidelines. We need to focus on education.
But without policy changes, we're leaving vulnerable populations behind. Not everyone has the luxury of making healthy choices in our current system.
Education is key here. If we teach people about longevity habits from a young age, they're more likely to make informed choices throughout their lives. It's about creating
a culture
of...
That's a naive view, Eric. Education alone won't solve structural inequalities that impact health. We need a combination of policy changes, community initiatives, and education.
Both of you present compelling visions for the future. Eric, how do you think technological advancements might change our approach to social connections and purpose, which we discussed earlier?
That's a great question, Ted. I think technology will play a huge role in fostering social connections and helping people find purpose. We're already seeing AI-powered apps that can match people with volunteer opportunities based on their skills and interests. Virtual reality could allow us to visit loved ones across the globe, maintaining those crucial social bonds. And as for purpose, imagine AI helping us identify our unique talents and suggesting career paths or hobbies that align with our ikigai. It's exciting stuff.
Thank you, Eric and Kate, for this lively discussion. It's clear that the path to longevity is multifaceted, combining age-old wisdom with modern innovations. Whether through community initiatives or personalized tech solutions, the goal remains the same: to live longer, healthier, and more fulfilling lives. Thanks for tuning in to Listen 2, and we'll see you next time.